Hello all, it's Devorah Krasniansky. Good evening. I'm talking to you from Adayad. Let me talk a little bit about Adayad, and then we'll get into the topic of tonight, which is the financial stress and shalom bias with Rabbi Eliyahu Pereira, and I'm really grateful that he was able to join us on this important topic. Adayad is all about empowering couples, enriching relationships. As we know, Adayad means successful, lasting in Hebrew, and thus an Adayad relationship is one that is successfully lasting. And our vision is that every couple relationship is a successful one where everyone in the relationship thrives. And so what we do is provide awareness, education, guidance, such as this conference call. We have workshops and also our website for all areas regarding the couple relationship, dating, setting up the relationship, invigorating the relationship, and resetting as necessary. And we have conference calls such as this one. We have our website, which is adayad.org. We have our daily marriage tips sent via WhatsApp and social media. That's through our JOT, Just One Thing. And all kinds of other workshops and ideas. We do also do one-on-one coaching for those couples who or individuals who want that. So that's a little bit about Adayad. I want to really jump into the topic for tonight, financial stress and shalom bias. It's a really important topic, especially, I mean, at all times of the year and for all people, but especially this year with Corona impacting some people's parnasa, and especially at this time of year, back to school, Tishrei expenses, shalom bias can be impacted through the financial stress. So I'm really, really grateful that Rabbi Eliyahu Pereira from Mesila was able to join us tonight to talk about this important topic. So Rabbi, you want to share a little bit about yourself?
Okay, great. So I have a disclaimer, number one. The disclaimer is that I don't have a money tree in my backyard, and I really wish I did. So that's number one. We'll talk a little bit about myself. My name is Eliyahu Pereira. I currently live in Muncie with my family, thank God. And I'm a coach for the Mesila organization. I've been a coach for a few years there, and we do a lot of good work. Mesila does a lot of good work with couples, with education, with educating elementary school, high school, college, engaged couples, married couples who things are doing well, and married couples who have a bit of chaos in their relationship. And I actually got involved in Mesila through answering an ad in the newspaper. Could you believe it? Like all good things. And I answered an ad in the newspaper. They were looking to train more coaches, and they had a great need for it. And I really honestly will tell you that I couldn't imagine how much influence Mesila would have in my own personal life. That before going to Mesila, I was very, very nervous myself about talking about money. Very, very nervous. And I relate to all my clients. I really do. And I learned a lot about myself. And I continue to learn about myself and the way the world works through my clients' struggles. And in addition, I would be remiss if I would not mention our tremendous leader, Shmuley Margolis, who works tirelessly for Mesila. Mesila is a non-for-profit organization, and you can look them up online if you just Google Mesila, M-E-S-I-L-A. And I'm going to repeat my contact info in the end, but certainly everyone is willing to send me questions, and I usually get questions after an audience such as this, eprero@mesilausa.org, and I'll say it one more time, eprero@mesilausa.org. So getting down to the thick of the issue, because I know that time is limited here, we want to talk about the impact that finances have on shalom bias and why it's so important. So we could talk about where and what nexus shalom bias meets with money. Suffice to say that one of my good friends, can I say friend? I mean, he's really an amazing individual, Dr. Yitzhak Schechter, in 2015 put together a survey of divorced couples, divorced from couples. And he had about 500 individuals in the survey. And you could take a look at this, at the data that was published in the Jewish Action magazine, if you just Google Dr. Isaac Schechter. You can even divorce statistics from divorce statistics. And he has a whole chart of, in the article, in the Jewish Action, he had a whole chart of the reasons why from couples divorce. And although the rate is about 10% of the total amount, which is quite low compared to the national average of 48%, however, we have an astounding figure that in that 10%, 30% of those couples, approximately 28% of men, 29% of women, said that financial stress was, financial issues were a were an issue in their divorce. Now, that's a large number, around 30%, and that, if you take a look at certain studies done in the non-Jewish world, hovers around 30%, and that's a real serious number. Now, some people have financial stress, and it contributes to divorce. They decide to call it quits. We've seen that before in the office all the time. And, however, there are those who go through life with their financial stress, and they carry it with them, and they have their financial stress with them, and it goes with them their entire life, and it doesn't change. Well, I don't have the answers to all the amazing questions that people sent. I think that it's important in the beginning to stress how widespread of an issue it really is, because 30% is really a large number. And there are different issues which contribute to that in our firm society, and we'll talk about some of them as we go along. But first, I want to focus on some questions that people sent. These are real questions from real listeners, and there were really a lot of questions that came in, but they really focused on these four questions, and these are real questions. So the first, and we're going to make it a focused conversation about these questions, try to answer them. Number one, my wife has strong mental emotional challenges, mostly around anxiety / depression. This has cost us a small fortune in therapies, transportation, childcare, chocolate, food expenses, and much, much more. I don't know how to handle it all. Please help! Exclamation point. Okay, as I said before, a disclaimer, I don't have a money tree. If I had a money tree, I'd just, you know, grow the money, right? But I don't have, and therefore we're going to try our best to answer this question, how to help. We're going to call him Chaim from Brooklyn. All right, next. How do you decide, this is my favorite question to tell you the truth, how do you decide on what to spend when the husband considers everything important to his wife extra or trivial? Yet, if it's important to him, there is money. Okay, so we have Chaya from Crown Heights. I just made up that name. It's all right. It's anonymous. So we have this question. How do you decide on what to spend when the husband considers everything important to his wife extra trivial? Yet, if it's important to him, there's money. So on its face, this lady is asking, well, I don't have that much money. My husband's giving me money. And how do I decide on what to spend? Because for me, it's trivial. He only gives me, you know, $5 to spend a week. I'm just giving a number here. And what do I spend it on? So that's one way to read the question. I think that the deeper question is, what do I do with this husband of mine who's just, whenever I ask him for money, he's just, whatever I spend, he's telling me that's too much. And for him, it's really, you know, everything that he wants. He gets his new car, he gets his vacation, he gets his fancy whatever. And when I, it's a real question. That's a real good question. So I'm gonna give an answer right off the bat, but we're gonna answer it a little bit more deeper as time goes on. And the first answer that I would add as a coach is, what is a reasonable amount for your wife to spend? It's a very, very shallow answer, but when a couple comes to me and they kind of have these issues, they're gonna say, well, what's a reasonable amount? What do you know? Oh, she spends $2,000 on clothes, $10,000 on clothing. It's way too much. I say, well, what's a reasonable amount to spend? And sometimes that gets the husband thinking that, you know, maybe clothes do cost more than I think. And that's an interesting point, meaning sometimes it's just a little bit of tweaking of the mind that really has to be done, and each party falls into play, so to speak. They kind of understand, oh, right, I got to think about it. Now, having said that, I don't know who this lady's husband is, and I can tell you that there are people who come in who are really obstinate and really just do not want to give their wives any money, and they don't want to, their wife wants to go on vacation. No, we're not going on any vacation. And it doesn't necessarily have to do with lack of funds. They just enjoy controlling the situation. And again, this case, this husband, he does have money, and he doesn't want to give, he has his own expenses that he wants to pay for. So this is a really interesting question, a very, very thought-provoking question. And it's thought-provoking in a way, like, why would a husband want to do that? We're just going to ask that to this wife over here. She's listening, hopefully she is. Or the husband. Why would he want to do that? Why would he want to say, well, what you want is trivial, and what I think is important? Okay, for you, there's no money. And we're going to try to answer that as we go along on a deeper level if stage one didn't really work. Okay, question number three. What to do if my husband just isn't motivated to get a better job? He doesn't feel confident enough. He doesn't feel confident. So she's saying she's diagnosing him. He isn't motivated because he doesn't feel confident enough. Okay, well, so what should I do? We have a strict budget and not in debt. That's really good. It's probably different than most people out there. But we need more income to be able to afford any extras, and I'm working to already on top of watching the kids. So we have Devorah from Farakaway. I just made that up. Devorah from Farakaway has told us that she's watching the kids. She's working. We don't know how much she's working. Could be she's working a lot. And they need more money. They need more money. They're living on a strict budget. They don't have any extras. And my husband is lacking motivation to get another job. So on the one hand, again, in the beginning, I'll answer it kind of in a shallow way. And it could very well be very effective. Number one, we don't know if he's not confident enough to get another job. Based on the fact that you said you have a strict budget, could very well be that he's a very, very hesitant man, like very careful person. And therefore, careful people may not want to go to another job that's a little bit more risky, okay? So there are some values in getting a new job. It's not always better. So we have to really take a look at that individual situation. Okay, we have another question, but at risk of turning this into a very, very shallow presentation, even though my pontification of people's questions is never shallow, I want to speak about money, why it's so important, and how to make this budget. We are planning, if you guys want, if Adiad wants, if there's enough interest, in making a separate presentation on how to make a budget. I want to start off with a couple ideas of how to make a budget. And a budget consists of two separate items. Okay, they're two separate runnings. There's the monthly and then the yearly. Now, in the monthly, we can divide into now two different things. I hope everyone brought a pen or pencil over here. And you can also write in your questions or send them in to the Adiyad. We're going to have a questions at the end. In terms of the monthly and the yearly, we have a skeleton and the muscles. Let me just explain to you what I mean. Is that in the monthly, we have our fixed expenses. The fixed expenses stay the same. The skeleton stays the same. Your rent, your mortgage, insurance, tuition, transportation. They're the same thing month after month. The muscles and the fat that can kind of grow, those are clothing, food, restaurants, etc. And they're cold running expenses because they tend to run away. So those are also variable expenses. They change per month. And, for example, in terms of food, well, I could spend a lot of money at a restaurant. I could spend a little bit of money. I could spend $5,000 on food if I wanted to spend $10,000. But my rent is pretty much going to stay the same. So my $3,000 of rent a month, I can pretty much count on that. That's going to be. What's going to be variable? Well, what's going to change are these items that I have to choose on. I choose. Do I want to spend $1,000 a week at the grocery, $500 a week at the grocery, $10,000 a week? And you probably could. Anyway, that's just a little bit of a primer. Now, we can have another conversation. That's just two minutes right there to explain. A budget, a monthly budget, is made of two separate financial types. Now, the next part are yearly expenses. And in the yearly expenses as well, we have variable expenses. I'll just say clothing, okay? You can spend $2,000 of clothing on a year. You can spend $10,000 or $20,000 on clothing a year. There are people who do that. And that's That's a running expense. However, there are also yearly expenses that are fixed. Let's say shul dues are coming up right now. So your shul dues, you dive into the same shul, it's pretty much fixed year after year. It may be a little change, right? But it's not like you're not setting a budget on your shul dues. Pretty much the same thing year after year. And I will tell you that a lot of stress in Shalom Bayis comes simply because of not knowing the number. We're going to speak about that. Monthlies, what I find in my experience is that the responsible people who fall into debt are not falling into debt because of the monthly expenses. Pretty much the responsible people have the monthly expenses down. They're you know, $10,000 a month income goes to $10,000 a month expenses. Boom. The devil is in the yearly expenses, the annual expenses. That's where the problems lie. And be it the summer camps, be it the clothing, the expenses that come from time to time. And one of the challenges in a budget is really how to work that out. That plays a major role, and we can't minimize that. That has to be the subject of another seminar. What I do want to speak about also is why is there so much friction around money? Why is there so much friction? And we're going to talk a little bit about it, another few minutes or so, because in the end we're going to try to come up with solutions for this friction. So why is there friction in marriage? Right? Well, you can think of things that have friction, like raising kids. Raising kids has a lot of friction. Let's talk about something that doesn't have friction. Bowling. Okay. Bowling, I've never heard of a couple. They never come to me and talked about bowling as being a matter of friction. In fact, depending on the day, I may be a good bowler or a bad bowler. And I kind of bowl now with like a little twist. I kind of throw the ball down. Sometimes it goes in the gutter. Anyway, the point is that my wife never criticized me about bowling, my bowling style. You know why? It's just leaving me out of it. Because a husband's bowling style does not affect the wife very much, if at all, unless they go bowling together on the same team, right? But I bowl, my wife bowls, and we go bowling. And if I get a gutter, it doesn't really affect her, right? She gets a gutter. If I get a strike, well, we're all happy. And if I don't, what about raising kids? So raising kids is interesting because couples have kids together. And they both have to share their responsibilities. And each one is coming from where they are and from where they're coming from, their own past, their own ideas of what's proper to do. So they're each raising their kids together. I'm just bringing this as an example for money. And they're both sharing these kids. And it could well be that two people come from very, very different perspectives on how to raise kids. Both in the perspective, they both raised differently, they both have different ideas. And it causes friction because both of them have to work on it together. Now, the same could be said about money. And all the questions that we had so far were people who were working, were not working, they had anxiety issues, they're sharing the money together. Okay, especially in example number two, which is what I want to really focus on, the husband not giving the wife any money. And they're sharing the money together. I mean, there's no two ways about it. So the question is, you can ask that a different way, okay? What's the stress about? Let's define the problem. How do two people who have two different ways of dealing with money, dealing with it together? The truth is that in an effective way, because if it's not effective, then it's causing stress. So the truth is that one of the great psychologists of our time, Jordan Peterson, speaks about this in terms of management. And people don't really like this when I tell them that the house is a business. But I do, and we speak about it a lot. House, a person's house, it's like a business. They have a factory. And they're creating a product. They're creating, you know, a factory creates shoes, okay? So create shoes in your factory. You bring in the leather, and you bring in the shoelaces, and you make the shoes, and you sell the product for more than you pay for. And in a family, there is an income and there are expenses, and we also create a product. What's the product we create? Well, we create Shalom Bayis. We create the children. We create the Torah learning. We create the chesed. There are many, many different things that we create. We create fun, create vacations, all these different things. We talked about as goals that people create, and it's really, really a nice conversation for a husband and wife to have. Now, when we talk about the factory, which is Jordan Peterson's idea, we have a factory. We have two people who are in a factory. We have the entrepreneur, and the entrepreneur has a lot of ideas. He's like running around with ideas. He wants to make like a phone with a computer called iPhone, right? Oh, this is a great idea. And he's the creative one. And we also have management. Now, management doesn't like taking risks. Management needs to be organized. And in any company, there will be tension between management, who wants to do things in a certain way, in an organized way, and the entrepreneur. And in order to have a functioning company, the entrepreneur has to know that he has to get his orders at a certain time, the technology has to develop at a certain time, and they have to have a certain amount of orders to Office Depot. They can't just, hey, let's just sell 50,000 iPhones to Office Depot. They only order 5,000. The entrepreneur has to meld his ideas. He has to fit his ideas into management. And management has to fit his ideas to entrepreneur. And the friction that they create could be a friction which causes the company to go under. It could, however, be a positive friction, because the entrepreneur says, I have a really good idea, but it's only really going to work if I listen to management. And management says, I could be straight about everything I want and fulfill all the orders, but if I don't have a great idea, then I'm really not going to be able to sell. So in our first approach, which is the bilateral approach, is when two people can speak together, the depth of the issue is, how does a husband say, look at his wife and say, no, I have this lady next to me. She's in management, and I'm the entrepreneur. How do my ideas work with her? How can I meld my ideas to her? What's important to me, and what's important to her? And how can make that work? In regards to the wife, look at the husband and say, hey, I'm in management, or I'm the entrepreneur, whatever one you want. How do I make it work with the other party? What's important to them? And that brings us up to the next part of today's speech, which is with kids, sometimes it'll work even if two people have different methods of dealing with the children. One parent is very strict. The other parent is very loose. And by the way, that can change over time. Who's the strict and who's the loose one? Depend on years. Change by the day, right? Or the hour of the day. However, even if there's no front, which is together, they both don't agree on how to raise the kids. As long as the children are growing up in a healthy and acclimated way, then there's not the friction won't necessarily develop. They won't necessarily ask help because, you know, things are moving. Things are working. They're going in the direction we want. We speak about money, it could really be the same thing, is that we have two people who one's a thrift and one's a spender. So if I'm a thrift and my wife's a spender, so I want to save for retirement. My wife likes to go and buy gadgets and go on vacations, giving an example. So if we have enough money for both, then there's really less of an issue unless I become a control freak. So moving along, what are the sources? What do we get? If we have a bilateral approach, both people can work on things together. And again, some of the issues that are coming up, I'm not assuming they can work together, but let's assume they can know together. So part of knowing working together is working through what we call Masila's awareness, and awareness has three parts to it, awareness of the past, awareness of the present, and awareness of the future. And I'm just going to go through those three parts of awareness. Awareness of the past. And I like to say that Kadosh Baruch Hu has a funny sense of humor because it gets two people together. They meet at the Brooklyn Marriott, have a drink of Coke together, meet for about four or five times. And they go to Adiyad, and they say, great, you know, are we ready to get married? And they consult with you, Mr. Krasniansky, and they're like, yeah, such a shidduch, unbelievable. And, right, this is how it works, right? And they go, oh, unbelievable, I'm so happy. But guess what? They both came from two different ways of dealing with money. And they don't talk about a date. They don't have to talk about a date. Maybe they shouldn't. But I'm just going to tell you a story that there was once a story of Chaim and Shandy. Chaim grew up in poverty. His father was a teacher. They had about 13 kids. okay? And whether they were in debt or not, they weren't in any debt. They've got one box of groceries every single week, and that's the way they live. Now, when Chaim grew up, he never had apple juice, okay? Never had any apple juice. Now, Shandy, however, grew up in a home where the father made money and they spent it. They lived like kings, right? They earned, they spent. Now, Chaim married Shandy, okay? Now, Chaim, as a good husband, took out all of Shandy's menhagim. So Chaim grew up in poverty, whatever. And he started to spend like crazy. They ended up getting into a lot of debt, ended up coming into the office. And really, Shane, the way of earning and spending more than you have is really not a healthy way to spend either. So we worked on that a little bit. But through this talking about where did you come from, Shandy made an interesting point. She said, you know, my husband, Chaim, he always keeps a bottle. He grew up, he never had any apple juice at home. And he always keeps a bottle of apple juice in the fridge and knows that he has. Interesting. So the point is that where Chaim grew up tremendously influences the way that he acts now. And it's not that two people who have similar goals can't get married if they have different backgrounds. But it really helps to know your partner's background. You go to your husband, one of the questions, and this goes to all the questions, is you say to your spouse, and we're not speaking about money, because a lot of the questions are, you know, they want to speak about money, but I just can't speak to them about money. So my idea is don't speak to them about money. Don't ask your spouse about money. Ask your spouse, tell me, how was it like growing up with money? What was it like for you growing up with money? I want to hear. And when your spouse tells you, say, wow, that's very interesting. And that's one way to go without getting into heavy hitting to speak about money. But you really have to understand the background. Now, we spoke about a little bit about the now, and I want to tell you an interesting story, awareness. And awareness is about knowing your number. And knowing how much money you're earning and how much money you're spending really, really goes a long way. It takes a long time to figure it out, and it's a constant work. I do want to tell you something quickly, that when I started working with Mesila, so I had to do this whole process myself. It was a little bit painful, but anyway, so I was in a fight with my wife about, or we'll call it conflict, right? Because we're on a conference call with how many listeners. I was in a conflict with her about the kids getting piano lessons. I said all the kids need to get piano lessons, okay? Mother said, are you crazy? We don't have money for that. I said, when I grew up, everyone had piano lessons. Now we have piano lessons. You know how much piano lessons train the brain? You know how much it is? She's like, all right, fine. Anyway, I go take this course. I come back. I have to figure out my number. I come back. I said, Adina, you know, and she, by the way, wanted one of our daughters to get piano lessons. She's really good at piano. She wanted to get rid of it. I came back. I said, Adina, and I did my whole number. I said, there's absolutely no way anyone in our family is getting piano lessons. She's like, what do you mean? I said, we don't have enough money for that. She's like, well, what about Ayala? I said, you want one? Maybe, right? So what happened? Okay, what happened in that conversation? Is that we had two people who had same ideas and same hashkafas, except I was living in dreamland. So of course we couldn't agree, because I didn't know how much money we were earning and how much money we were spending. And once I knew, so then I came down a little bit to reality zone. And once I came down to reality zone, then I was able to make joint decisions. And again, this is talking about a bilateral situation where both people know about money. If you're doing it unilateral, you say, my husband doesn't want to talk about money, I don't want to talk about money with him, you can make your own budget. You can make your own budget, but then again, you know, once you start making your own budget, then you're going to start doubling down on David. You say, David, what's going on? I have a friend, David. So you can say, hey, David, come on, we're now in debt $3,000 more. That's really going to cause things to go downhill. You got to really be careful with that. That's all right. Next question. So if you don't want to talk about now, because now is too difficult, here, and you don't want to talk about past, because like past is just like so much friction of the past. You need like, I don't know, 20 shots of bourbon when you're done. So right now, let's talk about the future. And the future, the question is, where do you want to be? Where do you see yourself in 5, 10, 15 years? Do you see yourself making big weddings, bar mitzvahs? Do you want to support your kids in learning? Do you want to send to yeshiva, to public school? Do you want to get the kids tutors? Really, talk about life goals. And life goals really come down to, they really attach to money. So sometimes the people we spoke about in the beginning of today's session, they're kind of in a rut. You know what? You're in a rut about the present. You're in a rut about the past. Let's talk about the future a little bit. Where do you want to go? And sometimes it just takes a little bit of that motivation for someone to start thinking about the future and start saying, you know, I really need to really look at the way that I work out my finances. Now, it could well be when someone says think about the future that any one of these, it could be used as dynamite, right? I could see a contentious wife saying to her husband, well, what do you think about the future? David, what do you think about the future? What's going to be? And David's going to say, oh my gosh, this is like another, I'm in for it, right? So if someone doesn't want their spouse to change, a style of conflict really is a good way to make sure they don't change. But the idea is to talk about the life goals and take interest in your spouse's life goals and to say, well, what are your life goals? And we're not even speaking about money here. And it's a question about priorities. Once met with a young couple, I said, well, what are your priorities? We did this like pre-marriage coaching, financial coaching. He says, well, what do you want? What do you want your money for? He says, well, I want vacations. I want to buy a nice car, nice clothes, and a house would be nice. Okay, so it's like 1, 2, 3, 4. So she said, well, I want to buy a nice house. I want to buy a house, clothes, car, and vacations. So for her, a house came like number one, and for him, a house came after vacations, a nice car, clothes, and a house would be nice. So after that, I said, well, your wife really wants to buy a house. Like, what do you think? And he's like, oh, yeah, a house. Yeah, I guess so. So we went over, I guess a house would be nice. And we talked about what it would cost to own a house, et cetera. So what happened in this conversation is like a young couple who was either engaged or recently married. And we just spoke about the future in terms of what are their priorities. And what could have happened had I not met with them, and, you know, there's no way to know, but he would say, oh, I want to go on these big vacations, you know, $30,000, $20,000. It's really important for us right now. And she would have went along with it. However, that could have been money that they could have been saving for a house. So until now, we spoke about how to work together on money. And again, a lot of these times, sometimes it won't necessarily work to speak together about money. I do end off with saying that this part of the conversation, and sometimes a bilateral plan working together doesn't work. A person's going to have to work on themselves. And even if, I would say that even if a person's working together, they have to work on themselves. There's a good book by Marsha Linehan. It's called The DBT Skills. It's really a textbook. And she has about seven ideas for DBT, for dialectical behavior therapy. And one idea is everyone doing the best they can with the skills they have. Being that we spoke about before, about the present and the past and how much people are influenced, it's really important for people to acknowledge that people are, your spouse, they're doing the best they can with the skills they have. And yourself, you're also doing the best with the skills they have. Another important idea is acceptance. This, especially for people who are in debt, it's important to know this may never go away. This stress may never go away. You may always have this stress. And you really, as I said before, you really can't solve the issue. You can make it hurt less. When we speak about something called a dialectic, dialectic is first you have to accept who you are, and then you can seek solutions. So I'm going to give an example. In the summer, I teach a lot of swimming. And sometimes I'm swimming in like these pools that are really cold. And I go in there, I have a wetsuit and everything, but it's really cold. So I have an option. And I can either like try to make the water warmer by getting really angry at the warmer with the water, but it's not going to happen because no matter how angry I get, the water is not going to get warmer. I can get really upset, angry that the water is cold. So I'm like, oh, the water is so cold. I'm so angry. Or I could accept that the water is cold, accept that I really can change the situation. The only thing I could do is acknowledge that I'm really cold and do my best to teach properly and not let it get to me. What I do want to say in the unilateral idea is that a person takes a look and says, you know, the money is really tough and I want to connect and build a relationship outside of the money and to accept that money is stressful. And for all the reasons that we mentioned before about COVID, about living in a affirmed environment, healthcare costs, housing costs, tuition costs, et cetera. This is a really great book, that I recommend called Connect to Love by Mort Fertel. And what he says is when a couple tries to connect, be it through compliments, be it through greetings, be it through shared time together, don't speak about money. Do me a favor. Don't. If you're spending 10 minutes of time talking together, don't speak about money because then you're bringing up the conflict. So the idea is for all these people who called up and they said, I have a problem with my husband and my wife, and they're not letting me, they're spending too much, spending too little, put that on the side. Develop a relationship with them. Anyone who's in sales will tell you that the first most important part of sales is developing a relationship. And there's a great book on negotiation called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, an excellent read. And he speaks about how to negotiate. And negotiation is about nurturing a relationship. And that's a whole nother schmooze. I want to end off this part with a story by Stephen Covey of Habits of Highly Effective People. And he says, be proactive. Be proactive means be a Joseph. What does it mean? He talks about be a Joseph. Stephen Covey says, there's once a man in the Bible, you know, in the Torah called Yosef. And Yosef, to no fault of his own, was thrown into a pit, was thrown into a jail. Yosef had a similar issue. He could have said, I'm in this jail. I'm so angry that I'm in this jail. And he could have been really angry. And he could have just spouted hate to everybody in that jail. Everyone knows this is Joseph the Bitter, right? But instead, what did Yosef do? Yosef decided to be proactive. And Yosef made everybody else with them happy. And Yosef said, you know what? I'm going to be the one that makes that Sarah Mashkin happy. And for better or for worse, when the Sarah Mashkin got out, he says, you know, there was this guy, Joseph. He was really a great guy. He really helped us out. He really helped me out when I needed to. So I don't have the answers to all of these questions before. What I can say is one more quote by Marshall Linehan, and that is, people have not made their problems, but they have to solve them anyway. And it could well be that the husband who's suffering with his wife is suffering from anxiety and depression. You haven't made the problem, and you have to accept that you haven't made the problem. But even though you're in this situation, you can still take steps, either through reaching out through a financial coach, through going over your budget, through creating a positive relationship outside of the finances, to speaking about the future, to speaking about the past, all these different things you spoke about, to really build a positive relationship. And I want to say, coming on to Rosh Hashanah, and then we'll deal with specific questions and the times we have left, is that when we speak about Rosh Hashanah, we speak about tshuva, we come to Kadosh Baruch Hu, we say, you know, there was a person who sinned, and I'm not the same person. I'm a different person through the tshuva process. We speak about the spouses, we say, you know, this person, Chaim and Shandy, they had a relationship issue. But Chaim is not the same Chaim. Chaim has decided that he's going to change. Change happens by one step at a time, and by making one greeting at a time, and one compliment at a time. And if you invest in your spouse and you show your spouse that they are important to you, then you have the standing then to speak about money. And we had one question here where a wife was saying that she worked a lot. It's difficult for her to talk about money, and she hates talking about money. Talk about the soft money issues, which are about the past and the future, and knowing your number, even if you don't talk about money, just to know where you are before talking about change is very important. Okay, so that is my speech for tonight. I hope it was worthwhile.
Yeah,
I hope
very,
people benefited from it.
Thank you. All the books and emails that you mentioned will be on our website with the recording, so you can check that out also. A few questions came in, and I'm hoping that you can address at least this one. my spouse, I'm just going to pick one, my wife. My spouse talks every is so stressed about money that it's just nasty to me. I mean, it could be a husband just as well, but it's like always stressed.
That's okay. It goes both ways.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that what she's trying to say, or I'm just going to add make my own, is that how can I help him calm down or help her calm down so that we can talk like normal people, work on the relationship and not talk about money?
Okay. So that's a really good question, and it really focuses our talk. People are afraid of things they don't know about. Okay. So if you don't know about the measles and the measles are going around, then you could just get like so stressed about money. So stressed about the measles. You don't know what you were already vaccinated. And this isn't the thing about vaccine. You're so stressed. I can't even have a party with someone who hasn't been vaccinated. I'm just like going crazy. Maybe I'll meet someone who in the mall who wasn't vaccinated. So people, you have to ask, you know, why are you so stressed out? And a lot of times people just don't know about how much money they're earning and how much money they're spending. That's number one. And when people say they're so stressed about money, say, well, what is it, to quantify the issues, that's number one. And number two, is this something that's very, very important, is that a person has to be able, in order for this relationship to thrive, not just survive, but to thrive, to say, I understand you're stressed about money, okay, and I understand why, because we're in debt for a certain amount, and we can't get the extras or whatever it is, right? It's not working out the way that you want to, and I'm trying my best. To set aside time to nurture the relationship where money is not discussed. Because if you're always encroaching on that, then there's no room for the connection. You're just going to squelch it all the time. So there's a time for both.
Mm-hmm. So basically, take a deep breath when you're talking about anything else but money, and learn how to separate it, money from the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's from that book, Built to Connect. Interesting, I got a blog post from John Gottman, the mumcha in Shalom Bias, and he has a whole thing about money, and relationships, and he said it's important to spend time together. Even if you're speaking about finances, that should be date night. Date night is so important, even if you're speaking about finances. And I was reading this, I like almost threw my computer on the floor. Could you imagine? This is date night. Like no one went out on a date and connected because they talked about finances. They went out to the Marriott. Okay. They talked about whatever, nothing that had to do with conflict. Right? They didn't talk about the kids. They didn't talk about seminary. They talk about it. He played baseball. All of a sudden, they fell in love. So the challenge is exactly what you said. Separate the stress from what's going on in your life, your connection. Do the data research yourself. Why did you fall in love in the beginning? Not what qualities you found in your spouse, but how did you find them? Because you went out with them. You had a good time. You spoke about topics which did not revolve around stress, and you allow that to continue. So in life, we have to accept that there are parts of our life which are stressful, but we can also have an amazing, loving relationships that are not stressful. And those that strive are able to hold both in two hands.
All right. Similar question, but slightly different. My husband likes to, okay, again, could be wife, but as soon as my husband. My husband likes
go
to
ahead,
spend,
go ahead.
My husband likes spend money on things to show off. I don't believe in that. So we have fights about that.
Right.
Fancy cars and fancy watches and whatever else.
Right, right. You want to know my real answer?
Mm-hmm.
My real answer is that she has to accept her husband that he likes to show off. And that he likes to show off and say, you know what? That's not my thing and that's his thing. And if I just don't have enough time, honestly. When I was younger, I used to get upset at people for all these, like, other things, right? But I'm not a perfect person. And he likes it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So
that's why I change him, just bring him to reality, so to say, but rather just accept that as one of his, I don't know, mishigas or whatever.
Yeah, that's his thing. Everyone's got a thing, right? He wants to drive an Audi. Everyone else drives a BMW, you know what I mean? Everyone else drives a Camry. He wants to drive an Audi. So it's not my thing. It's his thing. So, okay, you have enough money? You have, he buys you a nice sheitel? He buys you a nice this? You have food on the table? So this is his thing? So you're getting all upset because this is his thing? And he can't accept it. So at a certain point, if you have enough money, then and he's a nice guy to you, then it could be there are other things that he's not nice about, right? But we're assuming that he's a really nice guy to her and that he also buys her nice things.
Yeah, because the next question is going to be about financial abuse. So, yeah, let's assume this one's a nice
go ahead. Go ahead. We love financial abuse. Go ahead. The question's about it. Not we don't like financial abuse. Don't quote me, everybody.
Yeah. How do I know if his controlling is abusive or just being frugal? And, again, I don't know why it's but whatever.
Yeah. So that's an interesting question. Again, we spoke about this prisoner aspect that the husband in this idea that we had this question earlier is that the wife was saying that the husband considers everything I want to be extra trivial. And what's important to him, suddenly there's money. So we spoke about that in regards to Yosef, like, you know, you're a prisoner, right? Essentially, like, he's giving you the money, and you have nothing to do with it, right? Like, you can't control the money. You can't control him. He gets the money, and you can't control him. So I think that would be a similar question to somebody who has financial abuse, who's really, it's a question of functionality, I believe, like, if the relationship still functions. And it would be the same thing of criticism versus abuse, right? I mean, you can answer that question. Can you answer? What's the difference between a husband who's abusive to his wife and who's critical to his wife? Where do you draw the line?
In a certain aspect, it's how it's received. Some people, in some families, for example, on the money side, I would think that some people want to be very helped with the budget and some people feel very controlled. It's the same action on the behalf of the budgeter, but it depends how the person perceives it. I'm just wondering if Mesila would help with that, or is that something more with the Shalom Task Force to help determine if this is a severe case of abuse?
I mean, what this is a very, very good question, because what needs to be done is like this, is that we have in Klal Yisrael, okay, we have a lot of wonderful therapists. Really, amazing, right? And a lot of people go into the field and they help a lot of people. And finances are really important. And 30%, right? 28 and 29% respectively of divorces contributed to finances. So what I believe would be a really, really great idea is to have the therapist trained in finance and to help them know how to make a budget and how to understand the money aspect. Many of them aren't so keen on it because there's a reason why they went into psychology, not to business school, right? So what would need to happen is, first of all, they would need to sit down with someone to budget and see what exactly is going on with the budget and to know, like, what's going on. And then if we kind of find out the numbers, and then there may be a reason why he's holding back on money. Maybe it's because he wants to pay the mortgage and she doesn't understand that. But if he's really, if it's obvious, you know, to any reasonable person, I would use what we call a reasonable person standard, is that if it's a reasonable person, and this is abuse, and he's really not letting her buy anything, and he's being controlling to the point of abuse, then that's a question for Shalom Task Force more than Mesila. Usually when the people come to Mesila and they start, like, throwing around this, the barbs and the nastiness, then we kind of let the dust settle a little bit. They end up kind of going either way. Either they ended up going for counseling, or we ended up showing them for counseling, Shalom Task Force, whatever it is. Or they end up leaving, but that's basically what happens. A lot of times they come. We've heard a lot of great lines in the office. You know, I married my husband. I expected I get everything. I get absolutely nothing. You know, things like that. But sometimes it's people who are just so frustrated with the situation that they just say things that are nasty and they get it off their chest and we explain, hey, we have to work positively here. Other times people are really suffering from certain conditions, and it's important that they seek professional help in that regard.
Right.
But it's a good question. Okay. It's a good question.
So the final question for me is, when someone does call Mesila, what would the experience be like? A married couple. Let's not talk about the engaged couple. What would they experience? Could they call them, and then what happens?
Okay, so basically, check out Masila. It's a good question. Check out Masila online, and they have a number for the office. And what you want to do there is they have, basically, they have a certain fee that they charge, and it is subsidized. They have a really, really big operation. And what they have is a meeting of six, a series of six meetings with a coach, and the six meetings are divided into three different parts. One of them is awareness, to know, as we spoke about before, where you're coming from, where you were, and where you're going. Those are the first two meetings. The next two meetings are change, and change revolves around what are your future goals, understanding where you want to be in life, and then what has to change in order to get there. So for the wife to say to the husband, like, oh, like, I wish he was more confident, you get a better job, what we need to look at in the totality of the picture, and that's what you do in the change stage. The last two meetings are maintenance, which is building a budget, having a more proactive look at the budget, and seeing mathematically what exactly happens at every single day of the month, what are the income and what are the expenses, and that is the six meetings of Masila. You know, there are 12 steps, we have six meetings, and that's basically the standard of coaching. Obviously, some people take more. They also have an option for doing only two meetings, where you have a longer meeting on the phone and then a longer meeting by Skype or in person, where you just have more of like a kind of like this like awareness picture of where we are. And some couples opt for that. They say, I don't want to commit for all six, but I just want to know where we are, sit with a professional counselor, a coach rather, and discuss where our finances are and we'll discuss on our own where they need to be and maybe ask his advice. But there are different options, the sixth meeting or the two meeting, et cetera.
Okay, that's really important to know. And I look forward to our part two, sometime after Tishrei, about the budgeting and how to talk about budgets and all of that, the very practical part. So thank you so much, Rabbi Pereiro. This has been recorded, and it should be on our website at adzead.org/past-events. And some of the books and Rabbi Pereiro's email address will be there if you want to reach out to him directly, and Basila's website. So thank you all for joining. And if you have any other questions on this topic for Adaya, definitely send it to us. You can send it directly to info@adaya.org or the anonymous form, or you can definitely send it to Basila also. So thank you all, and good night. Thank you, Rabbi Pereiro.
You're welcome. Thank you.